Good morning. Morning. Would you join me and stand for this morning's scripture reading? Luke 8, 42 to 48. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me." Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace."
Good morning, TBC family. I hope you're doing well and that you're not too wet. I'm Grace, if we haven't met before. I'm on the team here and I do youth and intermediate stuff, so that's a lot of fun. The last time I preached, I told you all about how I was learning to drive manual. I just felt like you were owed an update because people ask me all the time. The answer is I'm getting better with the actual driving around part. It's just now all the fiddly hill starts and reversing and parking and stuff that I have to master just to get up my driveway because I live in Titirangi. So, still a work in progress, but we're getting there. Anyway, this morning, we're thank you. We're continuing on through our Jesus, People, and Places series, where we're exploring the stories of a few people that Jesus had life-changing encounters with. And we're meeting them through the mediums of visual and performing arts. This morning, we're spending some time with the woman with the issue of blood, or the bleeding woman, a narrative that's very dear and precious. I love this passage. Jesus meets this woman on his way to somewhere else. It was a side quest. He'd been summoned by Jairus, the ruler of the synagogue, whose daughter was really, really sick. And my understanding is that the ruler of the synagogue was kind of like the local pastor. His job was a little bit of everything, both pastoral, theological, but also logistical in the synagogue. So in one sense, this family was quite a key family in the community. Jairus was at the center of their local gatherings and worship. And time is of the essence. His 12-year-old daughter, basically the pastor's kid, was dying. And he'd asked Jesus to please come. However, Jesus had become a bit of a phenomenon by this point. This passage from Luke 8 was in the thick of his public ministry time. And on this day, as Jesus was on a time-specific mission, he was surrounded by people who had heard of him and these signs and miracles that he had done. Maybe they wanted to see him heal their synagogue leader's daughter too. So it's in the midst of all of this, the urgency, the buzz, the community drama, and the huge, slow, sweaty crowd that we meet a woman.
Among the multitudes on that hot, fateful day, was me, the unclean. For 12 years, I had endured not just physical pain, but also the indignities that come with bleeding. Doctor after doctor could not cure me of my affliction, and I bled. And to lose blood was to be unclean, was to lose life. I felt I was slowly dying. I was only a remnant of my former self, alone and near poverty. For all the money I had spent on doctors, for all the money I had given to those of little faith, I no longer had friends, no one to comfort me Oh, no shoulder to cry on. I had no laughter to brighten my day. I could no longer stand proud. For 12 years, I moved in pain. I lived in pain. I epitomized pain. Was this what I had become? What I had always been? Oh, the ugliness of my condition defined my very being, abandoned by friends and family, and even Yahweh. Oh, that had been the most difficult struggle with my infirmity. I was unable to enter the presence of God. But Yahweh promised deliverance. I clung to those promises. He had been faithful to my people in the past, cleansing the unclean, healing the broken. Surely he had not forgotten. Surely, surely he would one day make me clean again.
Just like the girl that Jesus was on his way to see, this woman was sick too. Luke says she'd had a flow of blood for 12 years. And we assume that this was menstrual in nature. She'd been bleeding the same length of time Jairus' daughter had been alive. For the women in the room, we likely know that menstrual bleeding is uncomfortable, sensitive, and adds extra admin at best. And for some, induces crippling, bedridden agony. For the men, we're going to go there a little bit this morning, so thanks for being supportive. Let's briefly consider her physical state. We don't know her specific condition and what it involved practically, but she would have likely been weak, fatigued, slow, icky, every movement painful. And sounds like it can't have been a simple fix because no one could help her. In the other gospel accounts, we read that she'd spent all her money on doctors with no success. Mentally, what a drain. The anxiety of not knowing what was wrong, or at least not knowing how to get better. The ongoing headache of not being able to participate in everyday life for 12 years. But on top of all this physical and mental strain was the added component of spiritual and emotional strain. Women who were bleeding were ceremonially unclean. They could not participate in temple worship. The law put quite firm restrictions over what women could and couldn't do on their periods for hygienic and protective purposes, to keep them safe in their vulnerability and from having to please their husbands and serve their families in that state. But the law also kept menstrual blood, as well as other bodily fluids, completely separate from temple worship. When we hear the word unclean in this context, we often think it means sinful or with reason for guilt and shame. But we know that sex, reproduction, and all of the things that accompany that process are not sinful in the right context. Having a period is not sinful. God designed these things in such an intelligent and thoughtful way. And if you ever want to discuss a theological framework of the menstrual cycle, I wrote a research paper on it. So, but instead of thinking about unclean as in sinful or something terribly wrong with you or even just dirty, I think a better way of thinking about this is that it was incompatible with the temple presence of God. Those two things could not mix. And part of this is to do with Leviticus's wider theme of needing a process for being made pure in order to be in God's presence, an idea that sets up God's rescue plan through Jesus and helps us to understand our need for God's saving grace. But a big part of this incompatibility at the time was also because God wanted his people of Israel to act and worship him differently to other nations. It was common practice for surrounding nations to participate in fertility rituals and ceremonial sexual practices as ways of winning their gods over. But God's people were to worship him, the one true God, holy and unique, differently. And so the law explains in great detail exactly how all of that was to be kept separate from their worship of him in the temple. I won't go into detail about that, but have a read through Leviticus 15 if you're interested. I will pick us up in a couple of verses in the latter part of that chapter, though. And I'm not doing this just to be hip and provocative. This is what our passage deals with, so we can be brave together. So Leviticus 15, 25 to 27. When a woman has a discharge of blood for many days at a time, other than her monthly period, or has a discharge that continues beyond her period, she will be unclean as long as she has the discharge, just as in the days of her period. Any bed she lies on while her discharge continues will be unclean, as is her bed during her monthly period. And anything she sits on will be unclean, as during her period. Anyone who touches them will be unclean. They must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean till evening. So returning to our woman in the crowd, she's been bleeding for 12 years. Most women would have times throughout the year that they were ceremonially unclean, but this would pass when their period was over and they'd completed the correct waiting period. But as far as we can tell, our woman has either literally been bleeding for 12 years straight, or she hasn't been without bleeding long enough to complete the necessary waiting period. She hasn't been part of temple worship because of her condition for 12 years. They didn't have live stream temple back then, no Zoom church or prayer meetings. This woman's gathering with her community and her sense of being close to God and God's presence were all hampered by her physical condition. And the flow-on effect, no pun intended, from this ceremonial uncleanness is that uncleanness is contagious. It spreads through touch. Anyone who touches her or her furniture, if I'm reading this correctly, is unclean for the rest of the day. They can't participate in worship either. And they need to complete water cleansing rituals to be clean again. The lockdowns of a couple of years ago that we all went through came up in conversation with some friends the other day, and we were talking about how absolutely wild that time was. For a lot of us, we were shut up at home for weeks or months on end. I remember the initial anxiety of that season. Do you remember the afternoon press conferences that we'd watch on the TV? And when PCR tests were something you had to go and drive to get if you were a close contact or at a place of interest, all these words that we learnt. And do you remember the COVID scanner app that you had to use whenever you went anywhere? It became a strange new kind of normal being that paranoid and hyper aware of who we were around and where we had been. Maybe thinking back to that period in our lives helps us grasp the life of this woman and of those around her a little bit. We don't know for sure how people treated her, whether she was completely isolated or not. Based on what the law states, though, this woman was at best an inconvenience to other people's worship, and at worst, someone to avoid entirely. She was broke, unwell, with no end in sight.
And so on that day, among the multitudes, was me. I knew of this Jesus and the miracles he performed. And when I laid eyes on him, hope rose within me. Could he be the one who came to set the captives free, the one who came to heal the sick and the blind, the promised one, the Messiah? Oh, he didn't have time for me. I knew he was in a hurry. I knew I wasn't permitted to touch him, but I also believed if I could get close enough, I would be cured. So I squeezed and pushed and shoved my way through the crowd of people. Jesus, Jesus, I believe, my heart whispered, if I could just get close enough, I knew I'd be cured. I saw glory in his face, and my faith grew even stronger. Surely, if there was healing in his body, oh, Jesus, I believe, even touching his clothes would be enough to make me well. It became easier to move through the crowd. It was as if God was parting a way for me, making a way for me. I reached the edge of the crowd, and there he was, Jesus. All I could do was stretch my arms to him. Jesus, if I could but touch his clothes, I stretched and managed to open my weary hands. With my fingertips, I brushed his robe. A moment in time, and everything changed. I was changed. I could feel the power of God. Jesus, moving, touching, healing my body. The bleeding ceased, and I stood transformed. He turned. "Who touched me?" he asked, but his eyes met mine. He knew. "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me," he spoke again. Well, his disciples were confused. I mean, everyone was touching him. But he knew. I fell to my knees, afraid, humbled. I confessed. It was me. For years, I've suffered. And I just wanted... "Daughter," he said in a calm, strong voice, "your faith has made you well. Go in peace." Well, someone helped me to my feet, and I stood face to face with Jesus. He looked at me with love, and then he turned and continued on his journey. And there I was, healed. Physically, yes, but more profoundly, I was spiritually renewed. Oh, praises of thank yous and hallelujahs bubbled up inside of me. My once crippled mind, heart, and body were restored. And I could dance again. My life has a future and a hope. I am free.
One touch on the tassel of his robe, that's the power of Jesus. One moment after 12 years, completely restored. And cast your mind back to all the ways this condition impacted this woman's life, physically, emotionally, mentally, socially, spiritually, completely restored. Something that really strikes me about this encounter is the way Jesus, on his way, somewhere else seemingly more important and urgent, stops and insists on finding out who had touched him. Peter's confusion indicates how absurd of a question this was. The number and closeness of people sounds comparable to a mosh pit at a rock concert, maybe Easter camp. And yet Jesus needs to stop and speak with this person. I've always assumed Jesus already supernaturally knew who it was and that he was pulling her out of the crowd for her sake and to jump on the teaching opportunity that had presented itself with the crowd. But the way he asks the question might show us that he genuinely didn't know. Either way, Jesus wanted to make a connection with this person, to have a real encounter, to establish a relationship. She eventually comes forward, likely scared out of her mind, but Jesus doesn't show any signs of disappointment or anger, not even for the secret way that she snuck up behind him. He simply clarifies what had happened. Maybe for the crowd's sake, maybe for hers. Your faith has healed you. Go in peace. It wasn't that Jesus is magic and that healing involuntarily drips off him and whoever's touching him, whether he likes it or not. The healing power of Jesus is not like Rapunzel's magic hair in Tangled that brings youth to those that touch it and sing the right song. Peter reminds us in this passage, everyone was touching Jesus. Jesus shows this woman and clarifies with her that God had healed her because of her faith, because of her belief that Jesus was powerful and could change her life. God granted her healing because she came to Jesus in faith. The fact that Jesus noticed that power had left him might be a little strange to think about, perhaps, but it seems to show that her healing came at some kind of cost to Jesus. He felt it happen. He felt the spiritual shift. And when Jesus says that her faith has healed her, that word for healing is not just referring to the physical, but it literally means saved. She was granted not only the physical restoration that she so longed for, but a deeper, all-encompassing restoration. She met Jesus, touched Jesus, and her whole life turned around. Jesus told her to go in peace, to go in wholeness and fullness of life. And to make it all even sweeter, Jesus called her daughter. Remember where Jesus was on his way to? To heal a daughter. He heals a second one on the way. How precious is that gentle address? How incredibly beautiful is this image. Instead of this woman making them both unclean, Jesus made them both clean. If we think about this theologically, with a bigger kind of perspective, this is massive and such an incredible image of who Jesus is. I believe that the incarnation of Jesus, Jesus coming into humanity, is the greatest picture of the gospel we will ever have. We skip over it so easily when it's not Christmas time, but in Jesus, the laws about uncleanness and who could be in God's presence were forever changed. This woman hasn't been able to be in the temple courts, which is the outer part of the temple, which was the only place that women could go. Men could go in, and then there was the Holy of Holies for priests only, right? She couldn't even be in the temple courts. And now here she is, literally touching God in the flesh. She's been so removed for so long, and now she couldn't be closer. But not only that, in her uncleanness, had she gone into the Holy of Holies where the presence of God dwelt, she would have died. But Jesus is different. Jesus is God incarnate in the flesh. And now, the unclean touching Jesus, God in the flesh, doesn't equal dead. It equals clean. It equals healed. It equals free. Previously incompatible with the presence of God, now at peace and in relationship with the living fullness of God in Jesus. That's the real miracle here, eh? Yes, how amazing is it that her crippling illness that had plagued her for so long was now gone? How incredible it must be that she's no longer on the edges and outcast in society. What peace she must have. But she has been restored to the fullness of relationship with God, with the presence of God. Nothing keeps her from God's presence any longer. Nothing holds her back from the fullness of life because of the healing and saving power of Jesus that she received by faith. That's the gospel right there, hey? As we've been doing all throughout this series so far, we're going to spend a couple of minutes in silent reflection before the music team lead us again. As we enter that time, I invite you to consider where you're at. What are you carrying? The strain of physical limitations and all the pain, disappointment, and isolation that they can bring. The loss of hope after waiting and praying for something that has not come. The grief of loneliness and rejection. Things that have happened that make you feel incompatible with God's presence, that you're not able to come to Him. Or something else. Maybe you just haven't met Jesus yet. Or maybe you need to meet Him again. What are you carrying? And what might an encounter with our healing Jesus do or change in you? In faith, would you reach out to Jesus and ask Him to heal you, to save you? Whether it's in the way that we pray and hope for, or whether it's in that deeper spiritual way that we don't expect but desperately need. We may not get what we ask for. We can look to Paul's discussions in the New Testament on the thorn in his side alongside this passage. But God knows what our hearts and souls need the most. Jesus. We serve Jesus who is full of compassion and kindness for those on the edges. Jesus who's not offended by uncleanness. Jesus who makes time. Jesus who is full of healing and saving power. Jesus who nurtures those tiny seeds of faith in us. Jesus who speaks to us as God's precious children, son, daughter. Jesus, the one who can make us well. Jesus, the one who changed the laws of uncleanness and access to God forever. Jesus who heals and saves and brings peace and freedom and hope. Jesus in whom fullness of life is found. In faith, would you reach out to Jesus? We will have some people on hand, some elders and others, to pray with and for you, and they'll make themselves visible near the end of our silent reflection time. Also, feel free to turn to someone close to you and have them pray with and over you. In faith, would you reach out to Jesus?